Welcome to the Intersecting Us podcast, where math and life intersect.
In this week's podcast, Brian and Dave discuss the art of persistence, finding growth in the face of adversity.
On all our podcasts, we try to do a good job here at Intersecting Us of making podcasts go smoothly and getting the dialogue to go well. But given the subject matter of our podcast today, this may not go as smoothly as it has in the past, because this whole podcast is about the word struggle. So I suppose if we struggle through this, we're kind of hitting the ground running here. This whole chapter that we are looking at from Francis Hsu's book, Mathematics for Human Flourishing, is about struggle and looking at it, the positives and negatives at it. So Dave, when you went through that chapter, I guess, did that go smoothly or did you struggle with it?
It brought back like my whole life almost, because in a nutshell, my life is a struggle. And so I could relate to what was in the book from really beginning to end. It was really fascinating.
Yeah, it had some good qualities in there. And I think, like this whole book does, and like what we're trying to do with our Intersecting Us endeavor, it has the math and the life stuff to just go hand in hand. In fact, this one probably has more about math is used, because he's a teacher and he talks about struggle in math. And I'm sure you've got some good examples of that too. But it really, the life part was kind of the thing that permeated this. And I know he actually, very early in the book, there was a quote that I thought was really good, that is very close to a biblical quote, actually. But, you know, those who have suffered know that suffering produces endurance. And so that makes sense, that you endure more. And then endurance produces character, which is something character produces hope. And I thought that was a good setup that he used. I know we may have talked about this in the past. I think personally we have, Dave. But if I recall right, this is kind of from more of a geeky science idea, but when you have a caterpillar in a cocoon, if you actually help it get out, that the wings don't develop and it can't fly, and the butterfly comes out and it's crippled, because it has to struggle to get the juices, blood, whatever it's called in a butterfly, to get there, to get the wing strength, you know. And I thought that was kind of a good analogy of what he's getting to in this book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that is good. And I think back to the quotes you gave. I know you've certainly had your share of struggles. You know, we're at that age, you can't get to our age without struggles. I'm curious, from your perspective, how do you see, you know, at the beginning of that was struggle, and at the end of that was hope. And do you see that you have, you know, looking back retrospectively, can see where struggle has actually transformed into hope? Because, you know, that might be like a wishful idea. It sounds like a good idea, but is there anything that you can think about in your life where maybe that has occurred?
Well, I do think so. I think whether it's, I suppose the first struggle that I had was maybe when you pass your first, or you can not pass, but fail your first actuarial exam, which, you know, which will pale in comparison to some of the other things that I'll bring up quickly. But it does, it just jolts you off center, and it makes you think of your life in a different way, and in probably in a way you really don't want to. It's humbling. It can be debilitating. And obviously there's different levels of struggle, but yeah, when you go into whatever field, if you're going to an actuarial field, you obviously should be fairly decent at math and those types of things. And you fail, you're not used to that. Mm-hmm. And I don't think you want to necessarily get used to it, but what it does. And then I go on to having a different career and having a job not work out the way I wanted it to. Some may be my fault, but mostly external things I couldn't do much about. And that was a struggle. Your self-worth comes into play and all that type of stuff, along with the exam stuff. But then, and then losing a spouse, I mean, that's a struggle. I mean, that doesn't jolt you, nothing will. Mm-hmm. But I think what it all does, and that's what you said, it ends with hope. You've really got, you know, two main choices, and everything in between, I guess, is it can just make you just be introspective and just completely shut down and think, you know, there is no real purpose. Life is suffering. You know, it's just something that, you know, we just have to grin and bear it, as they say. Or you can look outside yourself and see, is there a bigger purpose than what I struggle with? Is there something that, or even better, is there something the struggle actually enhances? And that's what that quote does. Your character gets better. And then I think for the most part, when you struggle with things, you usually find out who's really your friend and who's not. Who's going to come alongside you and who's going to push you into the mud? You know, and I think that's what I found out is the relationships with people that really mattered through the struggle, those got deeper. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I learned, I know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think that's really good. And I know it's easier to look back, but I know just in general, I haven't lost a spouse, but, you know, I've lost a mother and, you know, failed my fair share of exams. And had setbacks in, you know, business career, things like that. And all those things were really difficult at different levels. But, you know, I can look back at those and they're, even though they're all very different types of suffering, you know, different types of maybe emotion or physical or financial or, you know, all those different variables. But in the end, I can, you know, look back where, the result of that did increase hope and, you know, I think for me, what drives that, like you say, you have kind of choices of where you go. And I've had to make my choices. And kind of what I call as a guidepost in my life is to believe that all things work together for good. And, you know, that is another promise that comes from the Bible, you know, for those who believe in God. And so sometimes that was all I could hold on to, you know, during those times of struggle was I don't see the good now. I really would like to understand the why, because we're analytical people. We really like to know why. And often the answer to that why question wasn't there. So you're left with just enduring it. But the hope that I had was that there was a purpose for it. And I may not even find out the reason for that purpose in this life, but that was enough to kind of get me through and to keep my, I guess, focus on the right thing and not to get discouraged too much or, you know, to get down too far.
Yeah. And I do think as we talk about this, it's do we look at, I mean, we can look at struggle maybe in two main ways. I think a lot of times, and I don't think maybe one is worse or better, and I suppose sometimes, but, you know, struggle is something that's kind of thrust upon us, something we do because we have to. But yet, in Sue's book, he was probably hitting more the idea of struggle being something we do to attain a goal. And back to the exam idea. So, and we've given both examples. I think, you know, losing a loved one is a struggle that's thrust upon you. It's not something you hope for and say, well, I'm, you know, but what are you struggling that you're struggling to make meaning, to live life in a different way that you didn't plan and all that. So you're struggling for something. And I think that's mm-hmm. what he really hit in that book. The idea of, okay, you're going to struggle. I think we all know that. And even, you know, we're talking about like an exam, failing an exam is a struggle. What passing exam is a struggle? I mean, look how much you gave up, you know, mm-hmm. to study to pass. So that's still a struggle, even though you have an end game that's successful. I don't know why it just came to mind. It's like a light bulb, Edison with his light bulb, you know, the idea of, you know, I don't know what the exact truth of all the legend is, but, you know, how many different times he struggled to find the right answer of what would work. And then he did. It was a success, but there was a lot of struggle involved and it produced endurance and character. But he still had hope that he could get the right answer. And I think mm-hmm. that's the way Sue's kind of hitting it in this book.
Right. In another book where I've read Joe Bowler, who has written about mathematical mindsets, and she's basically in math education. And one of the things she really hits hard is that our brain grows the most when we fail. And so we're always frustrated when we don't get that problem right. But according to her, in the research, that's when our brains grow the most. And that was encouraging for me because, we all like to see our brain grow. And it, you know, I guess it makes sense because as an athlete, our muscles grow when we work them and we feel the pain. And it's not when we're just cruising along and not, stretching things. And so I guess if our physical muscles are that way, I suppose it's not too big of a surprise that our brain operates in that way too, where there's the most struggle is when there's the most growth.
Yeah. And I think the growth word is really important there. You have the idea of human growth. And when you struggle, a lot of times, and he started with that in the beginning of the book about we tend to see something easy as giving us essentially more self-worth sometimes. You know, like if you, we've been using different, exams. If you go through an exam and you get 100 because it was so easy, it wasn't a struggle. But that might be because you're taking, math 101 and you should be taking calculus, because if you're not struggling in your endeavors to some extent, I think it's nice to have, some times when it's just calm, but then you're probably not risking enough. You're not giving yourself, you're not challenging yourself as much. And what are you struggling for? And he hit that so well. I thought the two ways he put it was we can struggle for external goods, which are, a wealth, money, an FSA, a car, lots of other things, or you can struggle for internal goods, which has to do back with that G word you said, the growth, mm-hmm. You grow with internal things that, we've talked about some of those, endurance and character and hope. And these are more, I think the way we would put it is these are virtues, any society kind of sees this as virtues. And I thought I don't know if you wanted to talk to that a little bit. I thought he just did most of the book the chapter here is about the difference between looking at an external good that we often can't control, whether it comes in or out of our struggle, and internal goods, which we can control to some extent because we can control somewhat the amount of effort we put in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a lot of good stuff in there. And one of the things I got out of it was the idea that the external goods are limited because there is so much money. There are only so many cars, but the internal goods, like understanding concepts, I can understand as many concepts as I want. And then that's, you're welcome to understand just as many as you want. And we're not in competition with that. And so that is kind of a cool thing about the internal ones was they really are unlimited. And I think that we all like to have things that we can benefit from where they're not really based on so much external circumstances. And, just by the name internal, external, the internal ones are much less dependent upon, other people giving us the raise or what problem are they going to actually ask us on that exam in order for us to pass it? So there's a lot of variables going at it in order to determine whether or not you're going to get those external goods. But that's one of the things I realized when I was studying for exams was as I was approaching it and the nervousness was starting to peak. The last couple of days before the exam, I reminded myself that, hey, I've learned a ton of stuff when I've studied for this exam, and that's something that they can't take away from me on the exam. And so I may fail the exam. They can do that, but they cannot take away what I've learned. And at the time, it was more of a mind game, I guess, to keep myself calm and maybe keep my spirits up. But now as I look back on it, I think that was just a good perspective to have to really motivate myself to focus in on things that I can control.
Yeah. And that kind of goes back to the growth idea, that mm-hmm. He hit that really well. I thought I remember, when you look at things, I've got three kids, they're all grown now, but when they were growing up, you can, you have the first one and then you have the second one. You can still kind of go man to man, but then you get the third one, you got to go zone. You went to even further, so you had to do like a 2-1-2 zone or 1-1 zone. But when you think about it, we have, if you think about external goods, we're getting a little older, so you do think about your, I do have a certain amount of assets. How would I allocate those assets to my kids? And even when they're little, if you're going to like, okay, we're going to give allowance out or whatever during the chores, and if they say, you only have so much, if I've got $100 to give my kids that month, they're, let's go with 90. It's easier to do. $90, that's $30 a piece. That's all I can do. That's external. But now if I only had two kids, I could have given them each $45, So the, mm-hmm. they might, the first two might think, oh, I don't know about that third one, you know. But when it comes to something in the word that comes to what makes the world go round, as they say, love. Okay, so I love my first kid. So I got 90 pounds of love, we'll go with. But then the second kid comes along. Now they each get 45 pounds of love? Well, that's a category error. The pounds is kind of the old English way of like, but yeah, external goods like money you can be useful, but it is limited, and you know, right. but love, I can, you know, using the 100%, I can love both of them 100%. Right. And the third one comes, you can do it again because it's internal. It's not, and that's kind of what you were talking about. That's one of the ways of looking at that. It's internal, and it's, well, you could almost say unlimited.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's the internal things become relational really fast. You know, character obviously is internal, but the character, what difference does it make if you have a good character if you don't have anybody to share it with? And that's the way it comes. So I do like, you know, the idea, and you grow, love can grow, or you were talking about the ability to master concepts in your mind in math, that can grow almost unlimited.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's what he kind of got into it. I like the term intrinsic. There's intrinsic value to internal goods.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody can take them away from you. And they grow, I guess you could say exponentially, but infinitely, where external goods that you struggle for have a limit. You know, mm-hmm. they're not unlimited. They're, mm-hmm. And I thought that's what came to mind when I was thinking about growth was internal.
Yeah. Well, in our last half of this podcast, I had an example or two I was going to share just to put this into action. And as I think about how I have struggled with math, and so I have a story or two. I'll start with my story that began when I was in college. I was had an opportunity to join a math club that was sponsored by the math professors at the University of Northern Iowa. And my requirement was I needed to do a presentation on a topic that was my own topic. And so this was the first time I ever came up with a problem on my own where I was not answering someone else's problem. I was generating my own problem. And that was a struggle because I'd never done it before. I always thought it was difficult to answer a problem, but to create a problem, at least a halfway decent problem, was a challenge. And I was a sports person. So I came up with one that had to do with where on the football field it was the best place to put the football in order to have the best angle to kick a field goal, assuming the football was on the hash marks. And you're a football guy, so Brian, I know you can picture that story. But anyway, I just knew that if you put the football like right next to the goalpost, that angle would be really bad. You know, your distance was short, but your angle was bad. And then as you backed up, your angle improved, even though your distance lengthened. Your angle improved. But then if you go back, let's say 100 yards, well, now your angle is bad again. So somewhere between bad and bad, there was a best angle. And I was just thought, well, let's just find this out. I thought it was like a calculus problem because I'm looking for the maximum angle. So I played with it and struggled with it. And eventually I got an answer, gave my presentation and got into the club. And I was pretty excited about it. You know, professors gave me a thumbs up. And so I felt good. Well, that was in 1984, I believe. And then fast forward to around 2016, 17. For some reason, I decided to kind of think about that problem again, and I tried to reproduce it. Well, I was able to reproduce it, which was kind of good because some of my calculus skills were not as good as they were in college. So that felt good. But then I started thinking about, well, what happens if I change the field size, you know, from a pro to a college or whatever? So I then started working with variables rather than actual distances. And, you know, it was a messy calculation. You had to take like the derivative of the sum of inverse anti-tangent functions. And so inverse tangent functions. So it was messy.
Easy squeezy, right, as I say.
And so, you know, I had a whole sheet of paper just trying to take the derivative and then simplifying it to get to that one number. Well, when you have variables, then you simplify, but you don't get to a number. You just simplify as much as you can. And I was totally shocked that when I got done, I simplified it to my two variables were A and B, and it was the square root of A and B. And I thought, now, how could that be? I was not expecting, I mean, this seems like there's something going on here. There's some pattern as to why this simplified, but I had no idea because this was a random question, not that was posed to me in a textbook, but one that I just came up with. So I thought, well, I was expecting nothing interesting about the solution. So I went on like a 4 or 5 month journey now to try to understand why it was what it was. And I talked to lots of people, got on the whiteboard and played with it and had a lot of fun. But long story short, it was a problem I worked on really since college, took 30 some years off, but then picked it up again and spent another maybe 7 or 8 months on it until I finally came to the realization as to the reason why it was true. And so, you know, that last 7 months was a ton of fun. Because all I did was struggle and I didn't have to answer this, but I couldn't leave the problem alone because it was gnawing at me. And I knew that there had to be something. And it was kind of fun. The way it came about was I just had coffee with another person and just mentioning it to her. And she gave me an idea about looking at it within a circle, which I never would have thought about. And then all of a sudden I played with it and then the light bulb went on and I kind of was able to conclude as to why it was true. And so it was just really satisfying to get that answer. And if I would have just got that answer in the back of a book, that would have been no fun. But struggling with it, thinking that maybe I'll never get the answer because maybe there isn't one, you know, that puts you in a different mindset than if you know there's an answer and it's just in the back of the book.
Well, I think Sue hit that. He's a professor, I think, you know, and so he has a lot of in each chapter, including this, when he talks a little bit about teaching and he talked about the grades and the difference between mastery, you know, and just satisfactory grades, you know, or knowing how to solve the problem versus mastering what you have to do to solve a problem like that. Mm-hmm. He goes back to the internal good is the mastery, you know, mm-hmm. and I think given your struggle and your collaboration help, you got a sort of mastery with an internal good that you can use in other ways where if you just, you know, again, just solve the equation and maybe not even know, like you said, you're not even quite sure why the answer was, but you knew it was, you know, and that's a good analogy, a good story, to talk about based on what this chapter's doing. But you said you had another one. So,
what you said reminded me of something else. Maybe I'll throw that in real quick. Also from Jo Bowler in her book, Growth Mindset, she was talking about this idea that math has this ability to compress knowledge. And so you talked about studying something until you understand it. And the idea about compression is that once you understand a topic really well, it gets compressed in your brain so that it takes up very little space and it can be recalled instantaneously, very quickly. And so we can all maybe think about that, whether it be simple things like addition or subtraction or skills that at one time we did not know, but over time we learned. And then once we learn those skills well, that skill set gets compressed into our brain. It's almost kind of like riding a bicycle. You don't have to think about it anymore. You just do it. And so that is kind of the cool thing is once you struggle to understand something and not just like memorize it, now that concept that you've learned more than likely could get compressed in your brain. And that's a game changer because then you can use that your entire life.
Yeah. That's good. That it is. And it is as you, and I'm going to encourage you to get this other story, but we know that stories, life events or whatever, help us remember things more and internalize them. So it's kind of a part of what the chapter is talking about also, I think.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, so the second story is actually a current one that I'm currently working on right now is a couple months ago, I decided to do some videos on the Pythagorean theorem. And the reason why was because we'd just gone through a book on that in our book club. And I thought, well, you know, I learned one proof in the book and I thought, well, maybe I'll learn another proof. So I kind of randomly picked another proof and started playing with it. And of course, you know, the answer was right there. So I didn't have to play too hard. And I understood it was really cool. And then I decided to go after a third proof. And then after I'd gone through all three of those proofs, I thought, well, you know, why don't I do a video series about this? Because this seems kind of interesting. And I've spent a lot of my career the last 10 years doing videos. And when I do videos, I kind of go into a different mindset where I like to really think about things over and over again. And I draft and I redraft and I throw it away and I start over, trying to get the story right, trying to figure out how, the best way to prove it. And in doing so, what I was doing was I was programming the theorems in the software Desmos. Well, when you program things, that program forces you to answer questions like, where is this point at in the XY coordinate that you're going to be displaying? And so if I was just working on a sheet of paper, I would just put that point, you know, at the approximate spot that it should be, and then you call it good. But when you're programming it, you know, you kind of want it to get to that exact spot. And that forces you to think about, well, where is that exact spot on the line? And then it forces you to think about, well, maybe there's a formula where I can like figure this out. And so even though that was not part of what I was originally thinking about, the act of creating a video and then programming it opened up all these questions. And there was one thing after another. And this has been a 2-month journey. And I've been like overwhelmed with the, I guess I would just call them amazingly cool things that I've learned that I had no anticipation of trying to learn. And some of it almost seems amazingly lucky, because they really, not only did I understand each proof better, but I was able really to connect the three proofs in what I thought was a very interesting way. And how did I choose those three proofs? It was just entirely by luck. You know, I just pretty much randomly chose them. And yet in doing so, there was a connection. You know, I'd never seen anyone, probably never, no one's looked at those three proofs side by side before. So it was kind of maybe a unique question to be asking. But, you know, it's just that struggle of playing with something, even though you don't even know what you're looking for, but you're trying to explain it. And for me, when I try to explain something, I want to simplify things as much as I can so that I can simplify it, you know, in the presentation. And that struggle to simplify something is like a magic formula for me to find new things that I'd never seen before.
Yeah, and I like, that's good. You know, when you were talking about that, I was thinking about kind of a sports analogy, and I was not a wrestler. I did help wrestlers in my high school. They could beat me to help them go against other people. But, you know, when you're struggling against another person, you try to find different perspectives. You know, you try to get different leverage and move your hands, and you get good at that as you go. And these really good wrestlers, that you're not going to, what are you going to do? Well, I don't know. I'm just going to go with it. And I know all the concepts, deep concepts, the internal goods that I'll figure it out. And that's, you see those. And I think that's, you know, you were talking about programming. That's what programming does. It's programming. Mm-hmm. When you program something, you have to think about other people's perspectives. Mm-hmm. You know, well, what's somebody else going to do when they use the programmer, you know, and it's not just you. And so it just causes you, but it's back to that growth mindset. If you look at things from different perspectives, you tend to have a better mastery of it. And then when you do that, that becomes more internal, and the struggle is what gets you there. You know, that's, mm-hmm. that's kind of the way I think it works. You know, you think about the growth mindset. We've talked about this in previous podcasts, where you see setbacks as an opportunity, you know, instead mm-hmm. of, it's so easy to, you know, sometimes you feel almost hypocritical. It's so easy to say that for other people's struggles, but my own struggles, it's like, this is an opportunity. This is terrible. You know, it's just like, and that's okay, because the emotion gets into it. But eventually there is a period of, lack of a better term, mourning, right. when a setback happens. And, but then it's like, what do you do next? You know, it's the old adage, you get bitter or better, you know, you get better at the struggle, and it just weighs you down, or you find a better way, different perspective. And then, and then you have those things. So yeah, we can go on, but this is a good, really good chapter. It makes us think about a lot of stories and struggle. But, that's pretty much all I had on this one, but I wanted to give you kind of the last word this time. And if you had more that you wanted to add.
Sure. You know how much I like giving you curveballs. And so I'm going to throw you a curveball. It's just something that came to mind as you're talking about it. So we were talking about just now the benefit of programming things, right? And how we learn things through the struggle. So one thing that comes to mind when I think about your mind past, mainly your past, is programming something called flex term.
Oh my golly.
Would you like to comment on the struggle? Did you learn anything from programming FlexTerm?
I learned that the only reason I did this is I was going to get fired if I didn't. So it was a struggle. For those of you who care, or you know, it was a combination of universal life and term, and trying to flex it around so people could kind of think, you know, how much do you want to spend and how much do you want for insurance coverage, and we'd figure it out. But that's easy. But now you have to do it so everybody could use it. And oh my golly, that was some of the hardest programming that I ever did, because you had to anticipate so many different options that people would use. And I do admit that I learned a lot doing that, but I'll have to admit I did not enjoy it too much, because it was just so much work. But when you step back, it's like, that was an accomplishment, by golly. But yeah,
that's right. Well, you know, at the time you did it when our company was small, and then you mentioned like how it changed. And so our company merged with another company and it became very big. And now all of a sudden there's like lots of people who have questions about FlexTerm. And I always know they did not come to me to ask those questions. They came to you. So you quickly became the expert because you struggled to program it. And we can laugh about it now, I think.
Well, I think we could kind of end with that. The idea that what we've been talking about, when the questions came, I never had a hard question because I had struggled so much. I knew that thing so well and so internally that it was almost like a brother. Mm-hmm. And so when the questions came, I was like, you can't ask me a question that I don't know about FlexTerm. And so I guess it is a good idea that the internal qualities, I mastered that sucker, whether I liked it or not. But yeah, that's a good place to end. So I think as you listen to this podcast, it's again, the idea of struggle is something. And I do think thinking about the fact that it's kind of like other advice. When you're going through the struggle, it's not always easy. But if you can keep your mindset on the fact that there's something that you're struggling for and looking for things like internal goods that you can't really quantify, that can be almost infinite, as more important than the external ones, which do have a limit and don't always give us the hope and joy that we would like.
This has been the Intersecting Us podcast. To further engage with Intersecting Us, go to intersectingus.com.